Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here, and welcome to UBS's Washington Weekly Podcast. Each week, we do like to check in with the UBS U.S. Office of Public Policy to get thoughts on recent developments within the Beltway and beyond. So with Election Day being next week, today we will focus in on where the candidates have appeared over the past several days, what current polling is telling us, including some key Senate races, and more. So joining me here on the line for the conversation, excited to welcome back Shane Lieberman, Federal Affairs Manager with the UBS U.S. Office of Public Policy in Washington, D.C. So, Shane, it's great to be with you. Here we are, the Thursday before Election Day. It's hard to believe this will be the final Washington Weekly podcast before Election Day. We've been talking about this for months, but it's great to be with you and looking forward to getting your thoughts on what's been happening on the campaign trail and what the polling is telling us.
Always good to be with you, Dan, especially at this exciting moment, just a few hours away from actually Election Day.
Yeah, it's really hard to believe. So Election Day, just days to go next Tuesday. I know the candidates, they've been very active, very visible out on the campaign trail this week, covering many states. Where, though, exactly have the candidates been visiting, Shane? And what is telling about the locations on their itineraries?
Yeah, no, I think we talked about this last week, where it's somewhat of a chess match where you know, it's very strategic where each candidate and their surrogates are going. Tomorrow you're seeing Biden hit Iowa and Wisconsin. He's already hit Georgia this week, which I don't think a lot of people were expecting, you know, a month ago that Georgia would be in play. And actually some professional strategists are saying Georgia is now a lean Democrat state for Biden. And of course, Florida, and you'll actually see Biden and Trump, in Florida, kind of dueling each other. So Trump is doing Florida with multiple stops, and he's also going to be hitting North Carolina. Interestingly, I think he already hit Nevada, Arizona, and Michigan. And I also noted that he's hitting Nebraska. And, you know, you may think to yourself that Nebraska is a red state. It would go to Trump, but Nebraska is one of those states where it's not winner take all. You know, like in Florida, whoever wins Florida gets all 29 electoral votes. Nebraska breaks up its electoral votes. So there's one electoral vote in play in Nebraska, and that could be a pivotal one. So Trump, I think, is down in that Nebraska seat right there. So it was quite telling and interesting to me that he would take the time to campaign for that one electoral vote. To him and his team, it seems like it could be an important one.
Well, it is amazing how much ground they both have covered over the past few days, and it sounds like quite a few appearances still on deck between now and next Tuesday. And over the past week, I've been hearing a lot in terms of polling, a lot of polls out there. But from your vantage point, Shane, what is polling pointing to on a national level, as well as within some of these key battleground states that you've just highlighted for us?
Yeah, I think polling is showing that Biden is leading. And actually, you know, maybe at a higher level, of the 50 states, it looks like 40 states are spoken for. And if you break down the electoral votes in those 40 states, Biden has a lead of 232 to Trump's 138. So that leaves 10 states left with 179 electoral votes. And think of it this way, to get to 270, the magic number, Trump would need to win about 80%. So he doesn't need a clean sweep of those 10 remaining states, but he has to have a very good showing and can't lose any of the bigger ones like Florida. You know, he could lose, say, Wisconsin, but then, you know, on the other side, you know, he can't lose Pennsylvania. So polling in those states that I'm mentioning, though, Biden is looking good. Trump remains competitive in a few of them, like North Carolina. I think North Carolina has potential to be possibly the closest state. We'll see what happens there. Iowa is a toss-up. Georgia, well, I mentioned it is trending Biden. It's still a toss-up. So, you know, polling shows a strong favorable lead for Biden at the moment. But what it does not show is, you know, Biden decidedly winning as of today.
In addition to the race for the White House, we've been talking about some of these key Senate races, senators like Lindsey Graham, Susan Collins, Tillis in North Carolina, a lot of close races out there. What's polling pointing to with respect to some of these key Senate races as of today, Shane?
Yeah, no, a lot of these races are tight, and you mentioned some of the important ones that we're definitely following. You know, there are other ones like Colorado, where Republicans currently hold that, and also Arizona, where they currently hold. I think those two races may be gone for Republicans, and Democrats will pick those two up. And on the flip side, I would expect Republicans to win Alabama. But then, you know, you mentioned North Carolina. Republican polling is very close to how President Trump is polling. So if President Trump pulls that out, I would expect Tom Tillis, the Republican, to pull it out. It could easily switch the other way where, you know, it is a divided ticket. I think that would speak to people walking in, voting on the presidential level and walking out, which does happen in a presidential year, and especially when there are so much emotions. But also, I think Iowa could easily track the Iowa Senate election could track the presidential as well. So there is a lot going on here, and you know the Senate balance truly is up for grabs.
So Shane, I want to pivot over to the COVID-19 pandemic for a moment. So I know this week we've had a couple of challenging days in the markets based on concerns over rising cases over in Europe and also here at home. Monday was a challenging day. Yesterday we had a significant sell-off, and we did hear from a couple of Western European allies. So Germany, France announcing some new lockdown measures. Curious as to what those consist of, and is this a look at what might come down the pike here in the U.S. as we've been talking about concerns over a second wave of COVID-19 here at home?
Yeah, no, it definitely looks like Europe's headed towards that second surge, and France is imposing a new national lockdown. Merkel in Germany is warning against the virus. So, you know, there's a lot of concern, and you're seeing a lot of European countries try to get ahead of this second surge of the virus to try and stem it in any way they can. And I think there a lot of the European leaders are going to act forcefully and not take it for granted as they're seeing their hospitals almost reaching capacity. And where does that translate to over here in the U.S.? You know, you've seen President Trump on the campaign trail say we're rounding the corner on the virus. And on the flip side, you've seen former Vice President Biden say we're in for a dark winter. So two really 180-degree views on where we are in the state of dealing with the coronavirus. You know, I think if, you know, in the short term, you know, most action will probably be on a local level. I was just looking at the state of New Jersey, and they're adding many more states to their restriction list for travel advisories. And I would expect other states in the U.S. to follow suit. Out of the federal government, you know, President Trump has had his position well known. So I think, you know, maybe he'll reiterate masks or something, but I wouldn't expect a mask mandate out of President Trump and his administration. I think they'll continue to focus on therapeutics and pushing for a vaccine to come online sooner rather than later. And if you see Biden win, you know, remember, he's not sworn in until the end of January. So while he can make statements about what his policy will be, you know, he will not be in power till the end of January. So you have to keep that in mind. While he may have a more forceful stance, it's just a stance. It's not actual action unless he is sworn in at the end of January as the new president.
Right. Well, we'll certainly keep an eye on what the response is here at home, and a lot contingent on the outcome next Tuesday in terms of the policy direction. But more to come on this topic for sure as we make our way further into the fall and, of course, into the winter. Maybe one final topic we can hit on. So returning stateside for a moment, Shane, I know now Associate Justice Amy Coney Barrett was sworn in to the Supreme Court of the United States earlier this week. We did see the White House ceremony ceremony on Monday night. Associate Justice Clarence Thomas was there for that. Then the following day, Chief Justice John Roberts conducted the official swearing-in. But curious as to what now Associate Justice Barrett's casework might consist of near-term, and may there be any involvement in a contested outcome, should that materialize?
Yeah, there is plenty on the docket for the Supreme Court in the coming days and weeks for big cases, you know, on the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, on LGBTQ rights, on some voting rights stemming from the state of Arizona. So there's a lot of big cases coming down. The election issues have already started to percolate. In fact, you know, the Supreme Court spurned efforts from ballot cases from Pennsylvania and North Carolina. Justice Amy Coney Barrett, who, as you noted, joined the court this week, did not take part in this round of deliberations. But what the court really did was kind of push it off, and they can revisit it after the election. And at that time, she may join those deliberations. So there are election related issues coming down the pike, but you know, they may not actually come to full fruition depending on the results and how things play out. But you know, to the larger issue, you are correct, she is now on the Supreme Court and has monumental cases in front of her, like the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare and its constitutionality, like LGBT rights. So plenty to follow here in the coming, you know, days, weeks, and years ahead, since it is a lifetime appointment.
Absolutely. Well, Shane, thank you again for joining us on the podcast today to bring us up to speed, in particular on where the candidates, the presidential candidates, have been over the past few days, what polling is pointing to for the race to the White House, as well as some of these key Senate races. As I mentioned, this will be the final Washington Weekly podcast ahead of Election Day, though I know the day after, Wednesday, November 4th, you'll be joining us on our sister podcast, Top of the Morning, with our colleague Tom McLaughlin from the Chief Investment Office to break down the outcome to the extent of which that we know it that morning, as well as the initial market response. So we'll look forward to that. But Shane, in the meantime, hope you have a restful weekend anticipating what might be a very busy week or weeks to come.
Thank you, Dan, for having me on. I look forward to talking to you soon. And I hope we both get some rest this weekend.
Looking forward to it. Thank you, Shane. We'll talk next week. And again, today we've been joined by Shane Lieberman, Federal Affairs Manager with the UBS U.S. Office of Public Policy, based in Washington, D.C. I do want to point out to our listeners, and especially our clients, do keep an eye out for the latest Washington Weekly publication, which will be located up on UBS Online Services. Though for UBS clients, as always, you can always reach out to your financial advisor if you would like to receive a copy of the latest Washington Weekly publication directly. Before we close out, I want to again highlight that during this election season, UBS has been featuring a robust series of virtual events with external subject matter experts as well as UBS thought leaders. So please be sure to visit ubs.com/electionwatch2020 for information on upcoming events, replays, and highlights from past events, select content from the Chief Investment Office here at UBS, and more. And I want to point out that the final event in this series will be taking place today, Thursday, October 29th at 6:30 p.m. Eastern. That will feature Karen Hughes, former counselor to President George W. Bush, as well as Leon Panetta, former Secretary of Defense. So again, that final event today, Thursday, October 29th, at 6:30 p.m. Eastern, so we hope you can join us for what will sure to be a fascinating event. From UBS On Air Studios, I'm Dan Cassidy. Thank you for joining us.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory service in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, different in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that clients understand the ways in which we conduct business, that they carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide to them about the products or services we offer. A small small number of our financial advisors are not permitted to offer advisory services to you and can only work with you directly as UBS broker-dealer representatives. Your financial advisor will let you know if this is the case, and if you desire advisory services, we will be happy to refer you to another financial advisor who can help you. Our agreements and disclosures will inform you about whether we and our financial advisors are acting in our capacity as an investment advisor or broker-dealer. For more information, please review the PDF document at ubs.com/relationship summary.